tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast. Hey, Scott, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good, Jeff. Good evening to you. Hey, so Jeff, just wanted to bring up an article that we posted up on our website, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com. It talks about how you did some studio sessions for Those American Girls.
Yes, and actually I have that guitar in here today. It's a Les Paul double cutaway. And I just want to explain to everybody the dichotomy between me and Scott. Scott is one of those guys that buys a guitar, he leaves it immaculate and keeps it that way.
But I'm don't forget that. I play that.
Well, no, that's true. That's a given. But I'm one of those guys, I'm never satisfied, I mod them. So that's our polarization. I'll tend to cut them up, modify them, do whatever. And this guitar that I use for the American Girls, this double cutaway, our guest tonight is the guy that actually modded it for me and did some interesting stuff for it. So I just wanted to throw that out. But before I get into that, I wanted to know what you've been doing. What's going on with you? What's the new video that you're working on?
Well, actually, I just got done shooting a new video on the Les Paul tribute, which is the Lester William Pulfus Life and Times guitar with his image on the headstock and has his signature on the pick guard. And it's an exact replica of the 52 Les Paul, except it has the tailpiece that he patented, not what Gibson actually used. So it's much handier to actually use your palm to palm mute it. So I will have that in coming up in the next day or two. And to kind of go along with the theme of today's show and my own personality, the next video I'll be shooting on is installation of strap locks. That's as crazy as I get, folks. Strap locks installation. But that's coming up just for any of the beginners out there. But, you know, I think we should take a time and introduce our guest, and Mr. Andy Brower.
Andy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And also we have Monique Carvello in.
Hey,
welcome.
How are you doing?
Good,
thanks
good.
So, Andy, so obviously both Jeff and I have used you to work on our mini guitars. Besides working on some chumps like us, you've worked on guitars for many people. But tell us your story of how you kind of got started and you know, what even got you into repairing guitars?
Okay, first of all, let's say there are no chumps, everybody gets the same treatment. That's just my feeling about
that. That is true. That
so
is
I
true.
I treat everybody the same. Whether you're Eddie Van Halen or Scott Sill, I treat you the same. That's just the way I do it. But let me start with a preface. This is a 1981 Takai Stratocaster, and I just got her. She's a beauty.
Yeah, it gets a nice glassy sound.
So what was your question again,
please? Well, what got you started into working on guitars? I mean, because obviously you must have started out as a player, so what made you dive into that realm?
Age 11, my brother was playing guitar, and I said, hey, can I use that little thing? And I started playing because I wanted to get myself a girlfriend. And so I started playing, and within a year I was much better than he was, and he'd been playing for 5 years or so. And he gifted me some very nice guitars, you know, a Martin D18, a Barney Kessel Gibson, some amplifiers, Fender amps. And I took it from there, and I knew that this was it, guitars. I started taking them apart, putting them back together, and it was just in my blood. It was a passion. It was a fire that burned, and I couldn't put it out of my mind because it was just, it overwhelmed me with what I needed to do. I knew I was going to be a really good guitar tech. I wanted to be a guitar player, and I love playing guitar, but the thing that really gets me is making the guitar sound good and handing it to somebody and seeing a smile on their face that they usually reserve for behind the doors at home, you know what I mean?
So the big question is, did you ever get the girl, though?
Yes.
I mean, that's why most people start playing guitar, I think. So which kind of came first for you? Were you touring with large bands, or were you doing your rental business? Because that's one of the things you're really known for.
I'll give it to you in a nutshell there, Scott. By the time I was 15, I was pro in high school, and I was touring with different bands, playing with people 20, 23 and stuff, playing around the little circuit in Wisconsin. I grew up in Milwaukee. I was born in Encino, California, so I'm a Cali boy. And I was tearing guitars and amps apart, and I was making a living in high school working on gear. And so when I came out to California when I was 18 after graduating high school, I worked in a music store called Action Drum Guitar in Granada Hills, and I met George Johnson, the Brothers Johnson. And I went touring, and I got friendly with Quincy Jones, and I would say Quincy, David Foster, and Jeff Beccaro were pretty much my mentors and pretty much pushed me in the direction of to start a rental company. Because I was applying military discipline and wiring to, stoned-out rock and rollers who had no clue what was in or out. And so I labeled everything, and I made everything P-touched, and I cable-tied everything. And so my stuff worked the first time you set it up and turned it on, which is really unusual.
Yes, I have to say, if you've ever been to Andy's shop, it is the most immaculate place. It's ridiculous. His cords are wound in the same circular motion and same size. It's ridiculous.
I've mellowed out a little bit, but when from 79 to 2005, I ran Andy Brower Studio Rentals, and I had a good run, and I toured with a lot of people. Quincy Jones, Rufus Shock Connors, Wind and Fire, did stuff with Toto and Supertramp, Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, supplied Eddie Van Halen guitars for Michael Jackson Beat It, right? Did David Williams, all the Billie Jean stuff was my stuff. Black Crowes, Rolling Stones being my favorite, Keith and Ronnie. I'd take a bullet for those boys. And it just went on and on. And I toured with Crosby, Stills, Nash. John Fogerty was like my father. I owe him a lot. He has a lot of integrity, and I love him. And I think the world of him. And so you have to pinch yourself when you're working with artists that you grew up listening to. You have to kind of disconnect yourself from the fact that you are a fan, and you have to become their Secret Service person.
So so you said that you had worked on the Beat It,
mm-hmm.
Michael Jackson albums.
Right.
So tell us about that with Eddie Van Halen, because actually, ironically, I was having a conversation with somebody on Gear Page about Eddie Van Halen's amps. And talking about, just mentioning to him that there was an article about how Eddie admitted that he had lied about what he used and really made up all this whole story. Whether that's true or not, who knows. But what did you supply him, and what did he use for those sessions?
It was 100 plexi, a 50 plexi, there was a 7200, there was a Variac that was the key, there was a couple 4x12s, there was a straight 67 or 68 4x12 with 25 vintage greenbacks in it, there was a newer 71 or 72 checkerboard straight, because the boy likes straights, cabinets, and those were probably loaded with 30s, and then he did his little thing where he kind of just pulled everything in and out and waved his hand and got a sound pretty quickly. He's a wonderful gent to work for, a real sweetie pie, and he got the sound up real quick, and I think it was first or second take, he nailed it, like any good boy would do.
So, what else work did you work with Quincy Jones? I mean, he's worked with tons of people.
I did a lot with Quincy. Rufus, Shaka, Brothers, all the David Williams stuff. Whatever Quincy was working on, he'd call me in whenever, him and Bruce Sweetin, the engineer, to bring in a pedal board or usually a 64 Vibrolux left and 68 Deluxe right, a little pedal board, a Sesam pedal board back then, if anybody even calls what that was, and then Bobby Bradshaw would be working on stuff for me after that, and it was just the stuff sound, it just worked, it was clean, and it was just logical. The thing was, everybody was so caught up in the rack stuff and getting all that stuff going and using all these PCM 70 Lexicon stuff, and if you just played simply, you got a great tone and you didn't have to waste all the time EQing. I always thought that you get the sound in the room and then let the engineer get it on the tape, and don't mess with EQ. I always went for flat EQ.
Well, why don't you play something for us to show us? I mean, here you're using your... you want me to go gang?
Yeah.
So here, Andy's just using a simple Marshall amp that you could probably pick up for $150. So tell us about this guitar. What is original, and what did you do to make it ring the way you want it to ring?
It's an 81 Takai Stratocaster spaghetti logo. Got it off of eBay for $450 plus $150 shipping. I really don't want to say much more about it because I don't want people going out and getting them because they're really special. But they're made by Fuji Gakuin factory in Japan, and the people that know about them, they're coveted and they're lovely. And they sound ridiculously good, and that's the closest thing to a vintage guitar you can get for that kind of money. And to me, it's better than a relic or a reissue because she's got some age on her, and the wood makes a big difference when it ages, in my opinion.
I just want to point out that that was Andy playing. And, you know, being a guitar tech, everybody just thinks he's tuning them, he's doing that. This guy's a player, and we've had him on a couple of our jam sessions in the past, and he's an amazing player. Wow. So you're getting it from personal experience in his playing and stuff, and you can hear how he gets a really interesting tone out of that guitar. A lot of that is your playing, and I just wanted to point that out. You are a player.
Oh, yeah, and it doesn't matter. I can play a PV and sound good, and, you know, everybody listens with their eyes, and it's time to really clean the ears out and listen with your ears and not get so caught up in the gear that you're playing, but spend some time playing. And you know, it's all about being happy and giving joy to one another and not being cool and trying to shut someone down, but trying to back them up and play with them instead of trying to be cooler than they are, because those days are history.
Yeah.
So besides the fact that you, let's not, like, give away total secrets about this Tokai, but I mean, what did you
do?
It's
okay, cat's out of the bag, baby.
Well, that's fine. Did you change anything on this, or
no.
Did it come in from Japan the way it is?
Yeah,
and that's it.
Yeah, I strung her up, polished her frets. You know, the shop's located in North Hollywood on Cahuenga, and I'm there Monday, Fridays, and Saturdays. I do setups for people while they wait. But the thing is, what I did to her is what I do to everybody's guitar. When I work on a guitar for somebody, it's like it becomes my guitar. So that's the only way I work on guitars, is she becomes mine. So, you know, I cleaned the electronics, I polished the frets, I cut and tuned the nut, I rebuilt the tuners. I went ahead and cleaned the bridge, I retensioned the jack, rubbed out the body. There's a stuff called scratch out that I love to use on guitars. It's wonderful, and I scratch out the finish. And I intonated her, and I gave her some love.
Could you give out the address to your shop?
Yeah, shop's located at 5527 Cahuenga Boulevard. It's located in Valley Sound, which is a wonderful place to take your equipment to. And my phone number is 818-631-3777. I also have a location in Agua Dulce from Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday that I do setups and stuff for people you know, that live in Palmdale, Lancaster, Santa Clarita. But the thing is, you know, when you get a good guitar and you set it up properly, she sings and she blooms. And any guitar can sing and bloom. Even a cheese ball can sing and bloom. So it's amazing what you can do with a guitar. It's all about attitude. If most guitars that come to me are pretty pissed off at the owners.
Yeah. Well, he worked on one of the guitars that I have, a double cutaway Les Paul, and what he did to the frets, especially on the edge, he rounded them off so it was a little smoother. The difference in playing that guitar is just like night and day. It plays so much better. He had shaved the neck, and he had put my Bigsby on and some other things, but that neck, what you did with the frets was just
amazing. Well, the neck adjustment is so critical on any guitar, especially a Les Paul. You know, most people run around like with their pants around their ankles because their necks are relieved, and they have no idea what kind of tone they're losing from their guitars because the necks are so relieved. And then, you know, the action's high and the nut's high, and you play a chord, and you're playing some kind of weirdo chord, and you run into the diminished flat 9-17 because the guitar is so whacked.
Yeah.
And don't ask me to play that chord. I'm a string player.
So just out of curiosity, since we're talking about, you know, you're repairing guitars, getting them all in shape. So in the past couple months or year, just what would be those toughest guitar you had, and how did it come into you, and what did you do to it? Whatever comes off the top of your head.
Let me put it this way. The cheaper they are, the harder it is, because I have a standard. So if I work on some Ibanez thing, it's going to take me longer to do than a Fender or a Gibson, because it's going to fight me, and it's generally going to be so angry from where it was living that she's got to come to me, and then I got to have a little talk with her and tell her that, look, well, I'm going to make you good, but you got to be nice, so don't go breaking no parts on me. So, the cheaper guitars are a lot more work to do. You can't really charge somebody accordingly. So I give people good deals because I'm compassionate about the guitars, and it's all about the guitars, you know. So I would say any guitar that's shoved into the corner that I don't want to do is the hardest one. But I turn things around as quickly as I can, and it usually has to do with the instrument. And I like to do setups for people while they wait because they get the instant gratification and I don't have to worry about it. But the projects, there was a restoration. If you look at my Facebook, there's a lot of pictures of stuff, but there's a restoration on a 50s Les Paul that the neck truss rod had protruded. It was a 68, I think, gold top, and the truss rod had protruded, and we had to put carbon fiber on the back, and there was some routing issues, and it's just, she was a nightmare, she was a nightmare, but she came out wonderful. But it took a year, so it does take time. The thing is, when somebody brings you a guitar, I'm pretty straight ahead and honest about it, and I'll say, look, you're never going to be a Gibson. It's going to be this guitar, and it's going to play as good as she can, but even if you put a Gibson decal on it, it's not a Gibson. So don't put this money into this guitar. Sell this guitar. Get a Gibson. Put the money into a Gibson, please, because otherwise I don't want to, hear from you 25,000 times over the next year that it wasn't what you thought, because it's not a Gibson. It'll never be a Gibson. Go get yourself, do yourself a favor, get a Gibson.
You think that guitar was worse than working on my Washburn? Let me explain to the audience.
Declined estate, sir.
I had this guitar. It's like in the early 20s. It's a parlor guitar, little acoustic guitar. The neck was really severely bowed, and the top of the guitar was pulled off, the bridge was off, and it took a while.
Were loose. I mean, everything that could go wrong. She was in a bathtub for 2 years.
Right. And he actually got the neck. I mean, we had to go back and forth with the neck. He kept saying, it didn't work. We got to reset the net. But he saved. I posted the pictures up of actually both of the guitars he worked on for me. They're up on our Facebook page. And take a look at it. But he preserved. There was only one inlay that we lost. And other people that I had talked to about that guitar said, you're going to have to lose. And I'm going to have to redo the neck from scratch. But he preserved. He kept everything, and it works, and it still plays. It plays like a dream. So,
well, thank you.
That was a bugger. Yeah.
It took a while. It was. And the thing is, as frustrated as you may have been, I was 10 times more frustrated with her. But I never give up. So if I get frustrated, I'm going to walk away. But I'm going to come back, and I'm going to keep doing it and get her until I get it right. And that's just the way is my relationship with guitars, is I do not give up. Ever.
Yeah, no, he would call me up and say, I'm really sorry, but it's not ready.
Yeah, it's
and
not
I'm,
ready.
And
yet.
Now, I anticipate it was going to take some time, but it was taking a lot of time.
Yeah.
And that was okay, but he always called me and apologized, but we had to make it right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's like,
and
just do
guitar
it.
Guitar was worth. See, here's the thing. If the guitar is not worthy, I'm going to come out and say, you know what? It ain't worthy, brother. Sell it. But if she's worthy, if there's some gold inside her and she's glowing and she's going, yes, I want to be saved, then I will save her. But if she's a little, I can't really say the word, then I ain't going to work on her proper.
Right.
I'm going to say, take this thing and sell it.
No, thank you for being persistent, because it plays great.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful little guitar.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to bring back up the rental business. So out of curiosity, just so that we can inspire maybe some budding future business owners out of there.
For rental,
well, just for any business. I just want to go over.
Maybe.
Your rental business when you had sold it, you had what, you had like 400 guitars?
No, I had like maybe 7,500 guitars and
safe. I thought it was four. Oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
No,
you had quite a few.
I probably set up and worked on over a million guitars. At least it something feels like that. And I've owned every year Strat. I've owned every Les Paul. I've owned everything. And you know, in 2005, I saw the writing on the wall about Pro Tools. I'm an analog guy in a digital world. I don't do the Pro Tool thing. I don't like the digital stuff. I don't like the way it looks or sounds or smells or nothing. I like tubes burning. I like amps singing. I like it. I want to touch it. I want to smell it. And so when you got the digital thing going, I knew that the rental business was history. And they started calling cartage Cartier. That was it. I got out. And so I started doing guitar repair, which is my passion, you know. And, you know, if you want to rent guitars, go see Chris Johnson at Hollywood Studio Rentals, which is my old business, or see Lon Cohen at Lon Cohen Studio Rentals. Those boys really, they both work for me. They studied under me, and they're good people, and they'll take care of you. And that's where I'd get my gear from. Or Mates is a good place, you know.
Well, so the question I was going to get to was, I was just curious, so when you started the rental business, like, what did you have? I mean, I imagine you didn't have a whole lot, and you grew it into this monster.
You want me to give you the list of what I bought first? Let's see, I was 12 years old. I went and bought a 57 Esquire for $35 a garage sale. I got the guitar player issue that same day with Jerry Garcia on the cover. That was a natural strat. I looked at my Esquire. I looked at the stripping solution in the other room, and I stripped this up. And that was the only guitar I ever really molested that bad. And I learned my lesson. I never did that again. But I did it, okay? And so I've had some of my favorite guitars. I had a 58 Les Paul that Mark Knopfler owns now. I've had every Gear Strat. Probably my favorite Gear Strat's going to be 56, 59, 61, 63. Mm-hmm. I had a 67 that John Fogerty has now. That's silly, stupid. And some of the early 70s, you know, they're good if you get a light one and she ain't got too much lacquer or poly, whatever they call it on there. But I like Les Pauls a lot. I like Gibson Acoustics over Martin, even though Martins are nice and they look pretty and they sound pretty and they play pretty. I'm more of a street player. More of a, I guess I could use some words that were a little bit more expressive, but I think it's probably not appropriate.
So then you obviously then did quite a bit of touring, which we talked about. So for the folks out there that don't have an Andy Brower sitting on the side of them, what would you tell that guitar player that's going out and playing the club for 200-300 people a night? He or she is their own guitar tech. What should they have, and what should they be doing to their guitar to make sure it plays every night?
First of all, spend this $75 or $65 and get your guitar set up properly. Get the nut cut, get the tuned, and get the, you know, the bridge set up properly. Get the neck straight. Get your electronics in order. You know, don't cheap out on guitar cables. You know, better to have less is more. Better to have good quality stuff than to get a bunch of, you know, cheapo stuff from wherever. And hell, look at all the stuff I have. Well, it sounds like, you know, yuck. And so better to have one good guitar and a good cable. Your cable's important. The cable's everything. And the strings, change your strings often. You know, wash your hands before you play the guitar. That's big. You know, the chicken thing don't go well with the maple fingerboards, you know. And, you know, and just be aware of your amp. If it's humming, don't kick it unless you're playing a gig. If it's a Fender tube amp and it's going, rah, you know, a little kick on the side going to get you through the gig. I didn't say that. Maybe I did. But the thing is, you know,
I'm in shock.
Preventative maintenance is key. Maintain your stuff. It's going to work. Because if you don't have a spare, when you play a gig, guess what? It's going to blow up. But if you got a spare behind it, the little spare behind the big amp's going to turn around and go, okay, fine, I'll behave. But if you got no spare, that big amp is going to go, I'm going to lunch. See you later.
Bye. Yeah, no, that's true. A lot of people forget that. The old rock and roll mentality was you always had spares.
Yeah.
I had a gig I played. I had four guitars with me. First guitar, first song, broke a string. Went to the second guitar, broke a string. Yeah. Went to the third guitar, broke a string.
And then you went in the string and you used all the nines because you had...
Yeah, that's right. Like ran, that off. Ran off, but I mean, it's that's happened where I literally went through three guitars in a period of one song. It happens.
You have to prepare for the worst. I mean, if you... Look... A little knowledge is dangerous, okay? So if you're going to play guitar, you have to decide, am I going to play guitar for a living, or am I going to have a real job, and is this my joy? Is this going to be my 15 minutes after I put the kids to sleep and do all this other stuff to get my time for myself, which is so sacred, okay? And after you decide where you stand with your guitars, then do a little bit of reading. Google, you know, boom. you know, about your guitar, you know, find out, get some tools, you know, get some contact cleaner. But, you know, if it feels like, if you're adjusting a truss rod, it feels like it's going to break, well, guess what? Don't break it. You know, it's really simple. Apply your simple, intuition. Your gut intuition is everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And so knowledge is power. And you know, that's what you want. You want to know what you're doing, but you don't want to get in so deep. Like, you know, I had a client bring me a Les Paul, and, you know, his wife nicked the top, and he tried to fix it, and it looks like the last vacation I took to Hawaii when I went into the volcano, and it was very interesting. And so now she's sitting there in my and I gotta do something with the top and make it right, and I will, and I'm thinking about what to do. But, you know, just don't make stupid mistakes. Don't mod something because you can't. Mod it because it's going to enhance your playing and your
right.
sound. But if it's a vintage guitar, shame on you if you start cutting into it or something. And don't do that. That's go buy yourself a reissue. And I can make the reissue sound really close to the originals and feel really good.
No, the reason we would mod our guitars in the past was because, especially in that period of time around the 70s, they weren't that good. The necks were big and bulky. We had to shave them down because they weren't making them like they used to. So we did it.
Every
we didn't just
Strat
do it to
different. Them. Did you know that? Every year, every single year, Leo made changes. There's not one Strat year that's the same as the other. There's always some little refinements. And in my opinion, Mike McGuire, who's running the Gibson Custom Shop, is making the best Les Pauls ever besides the 50s, early late 50s. You know, and those Gibson R9 Les Paul 59 bursts are unbelievable now, and what they've done, and the refinement, and they're killer. Mm-hmm. And what I can do with those guitars is off the charts. You know, it's, I've got little secrets that, you know.
Well, so bringing that up, you know, less is more. You mentioned before one of my favorite sayings that Gibson came up with about the Les Paul. You mentioned mm-hmm. Les Paul. Probably if 90% of our people closed their eyes and they thought of someone playing Les Paul, they would think of one person. They would think of Slash. Although I think they should think of Les Paul being his guitar. They would think of Slash.
Well, you know,
or Jimmy Page, maybe.
Well, of course, Jimmy Page. Of course, you know. I think Jimmy would be like the sexiest, coolest guy right away. You know, with the pants and the Les Paul and the hanging down and the singer and you know and the way he did it and he had good taste and burst and all the Marshalls. I mean, come on, please. Those guys were brilliant, right? Hendrix probably being my favorite, biggest influence. And I worked for Stevie Ray Vaughan, and that was really fun. And he was a sweetheart. But Slash, of all the people I've ever worked for, would be the most humble, deserving, kindest, most compassionate rock star. You know, he deserves every bit of the good stuff because he is a bloody good guitar player, and he loves the guitar. It's all about the guitar with him. And so when Mo and I do work with him on his Les Pauls and stuff, you know, we're both Les Paul freaks. I mean, my favorite guitars are Les Pauls, hands down. Now, I like to play the Strat because it's a sexy guitar. You can put it, push it against you, and she'll sing and she'll bloom, and you can get away with murder with a Strat. With Les Paul, you better be on your game or you're going to sound like shit, you know? Really. And so so the thing is, Slash is just, he's brilliant. He loves the guitar. He never stops playing. He eats it up. You know, I can't think of any other guitar player on the planet that's more deserving of Guitar Player of the Year than Slash. And on the other side of the coin, I would put Prince.
Really?
Okay? The other side of the coin being the worst attitude guitar player because of what he just did to that boy's guitar on Jimmy.
Yeah, we were just talking about that on the phone. Tell us about that. I saw the video of him playing, which I never realized.
I really don't have anything to say other than no good deed goes unpunished on planet Earth because I guess Captain Kirk, the guitar player with the Roots band for Jimmy Fallon, loaned the guitar to Prince. Prince fancied it during sound check and said, you know, whatever he said, and he played the guitar, and he played brilliantly. You can definitely tell he's been listening to Jimi Hendrix, especially with the facial contortions, which is totally not cool for Prince. But since Jimmy did it, it became cool, and he sounded and played great, and the band was cool. But when he took Mr. Kirk's guitar and tossed it into the air and broke the headstock, I lost all respect for him.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, the word trust, you know, it goes out the window. And, you know, that was his baby. You know, Captain Kirk was watching the guitar being played, going, that's my guitar. I love that guitar. It's a 1961 Crestwood. She's all original except for the tuners. She's my baby. Oh, isn't that sweet? I feel good. You know, it's like watching your kid pass the football and get a touchdown. Wow, you know. And then he throws the thing. It's like, you know, decline to state any further comment on what I feel. Let's just talk about something else.
Okay.
We got a question from the chat room. I thought this would be an interesting one. And also, by the way, if you want to get into our chat room, just go to www.flowguitarenthusiast.com, click on the chat button, and come on in and join us. But anyway, the question is, did you ever get handed a guitar and get asked to do a mod and just cringe about the way somebody wanted to ruin it? Did you talk them out of it?
Always. I will refuse to do, like, if someone hands me a 54 Strat and puts a Floyd Rose on it, and I have a client that was done for, a very good client who I won't disclose because of respect, no, I would say, no, sir, I will not do this work. You will need to take it to someone else. I will not molest and deface your guitar in this manner, and you will, I'm sorry, negative. No.
Mm-hmm.
I won't do that.
Pretty common. Since mentioning of the live chat, we should also mention you can call in live to speak.
We
with
got
Andy.
A caller. Do you want me to take it?
Yeah, take the call.
Here we go. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast. Can I have your name and where you're calling from?
How you doing? My name is Jason, and calling from Glendale.
Jason from Glendale, welcome. You have a question for our guest Andy Brower.
Yes, how you guys doing? Man, I wish I could sit there and talk shop with you guys all night. Just unbelievable, some of that information.
Well, here's
my scenario. I've got a couple of Epiphone Les Pauls, and both of them are standards, and had them upgraded with some 57 USA reissue pickups.
Okay.
Both of them do sound a lot better.
Okay.
I admit it, they do. But I was told that, you know, dealing with the wiring and the pots wouldn't make that much of a difference. You are probably the person that could tell me yes or no.
You know, a lot of people are going out and buying the pot kits and getting new pots, and they're going, ooh, I got new pots, you know. And the thing is, yes, the pots make a difference, but if you clean them bastards, it'll be a lot better. If you put some good capacitors in there, you know, even some of the some original Sprague 022 by 400 volt caps, or some of the reissue ones. There's a lot of good ones online. You know, you're better putting money into the caps after you do the pickups. Clean, you know, get some contact cleaner and clean the jack and clean the pots. And start there, because the caps make a big difference. You know, the pots, yes, everything in the chain makes a difference. Yes, sir.
Okay, and changing the pots. I mean, let's say I went ahead and spent the extra bucks to do it. Again, they are just Epiphones, but I heard such a big difference with the pickups. I'm wondering, is there going to be that much of a difference, or just what you're saying, just some cleaner and maybe some caps will get the job done? And what would I notice in the difference in my sound?
Okay, clarity is the first word, sir. You will notice that when you play the guitar that you'll get a clearer sound. There'll be a better sustain, a better transfer of tone. You know, the way most guitars come through, the wiring, the solder is old and it gets cracked, and then you lose tone there.
Right.
So a refreshment on the soldering is helpful. You know, you have to look at the guitar. You know, is it worth putting all this work into this Epiphone, or just the pickups and some good caps and maybe a Switchcraft jack, and boom, I'm done with this one, and then save
your money. Okay, you just said a Switchcraft jack?
No, Switchcraft. A USA made quarter-inch jack for the output jack, because that cheese ball thing from China, she got a failure on your first good gig, I guarantee it.
you're pretty much right on the money. But I got to say, the pickups did make a big difference.
Yes.
To the point where I'm like, you know, the thing sounds good, plays pretty good. You know, do I go one step further and have that stuff done? So your recommendation at this point would be, no, just clean them?
Just clean them and let, you know, give me a buzz, bring her in. Let me look at her. Let's do an evaluation. It won't cost you anything. I'm happy to look at her. Let's figure out where she's at. Let's look at your budget. Let's look at what your dream list is of the guitars that you want to own. Don't dump all your money into this one. Let's get her as good as she can. Boom, let's move on. And then you'll have something to save for. And really think about what you want to put your money into, because you don't want to keep buying and selling guitars. You want to buy them and keep them if you can.
Absolutely. That's actually why I've got these guitars. They were kicked down to me a while ago, and they weren't doing much, so I figured, let me, you know, put a little bit of money into them, and maybe I'll enjoy playing them, which I have been. I have been doing that, and at this point, I'm like, you know what, maybe I've done enough. But that was a very, very good answer, and there's a place that I can get your phone number to give you a call off air.
No. 818-631-3777. And yes, give me a buzz. What was your name again?
My name is Jason.
Jason, just give me a call, brother. I'll be happy to chat with you, okay, and take care of
you. Right on.
And bring your guitar in, and let's look at her, because the nut, all those little things make a big difference. Even if you tighten them tuning peg bushings, you'll be amazed at how much better sound you get.
Wonderful. I totally appreciate your time, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
So we have a question here on our chat room here from Josh. He's asking, what's the secret to keeping a Bigsby in tune? Roller bridge, graphite, what's the magic there?
Some WD-40 on the where the roller on the Bigsby itself, where all the moving parts, some WD-40, get those suckers, get all your grime off of there with a Q-tip, and clean the moving parts with WD-40. Keep your nut slots clean, keep the bridge slots clean, and just be aware of how you tie the strings is really important at the headstock, because a lot of people don't string the guitars properly.
So let me ask you this question. This is one thing that I know happens to me every time, and it's kind of related to the Bigsby, because you notice it quickly with a Bigsby. Every guitar I've gotten new, I don't care if it's on the Plec machine or not, you're tuning the guitar or you're playing your Bigsby and you hear the plink.
That's because the nut is too tight, and you need to either cut it and open her up with a little bit of sandpaper. Be careful not doing this at home, kids, because you'll go too low, and the thing will buzz against the fret, and then you'll really be in sucko land. And unless you know how to use super glue and accelerator properly, you'll not be able to fix her. And don't play with super glue at home alone, because if you spill that stuff on your guitar, it's almost impossible to get it off.
Do you put graphite in the nut?
I use pencil lead. I don't use Jimmy's guaranteed 6-inch enhancement to your thing, lube. I use, pencil lead. I keep the nuts clean. I keep my nuts clean.
Should be a new slogan for you.
It's an old slogan, baby.
So, another maybe a personal question on my side, but, you know, out of curiosity, so modern Gibsons are now coming out with plastic nuts. Is it worth spending the money to replace it with a bone nut?
100% absolutely yes. And as Slash uses, he prefers the woolly mammoth tusk, the petrified fossil ivory.
That's what I have on my Martin.
And that makes a huge difference on certain guitars. On other guitars, it's wasted. Bone makes a big difference. I mean, Mo, don't you think that the bone on the Gibson acoustic we did for you made a huge difference?
Huge. Absolutely huge.
I mean, and Mo is a great guitar player. She's a songwriter, but she plays guitar like Jimmy Page. She's one of the first, I guess, women, you know, I say chick, but spank me for that one. She's the first woman guitar player that doesn't sound like a woman. She plays like a guitar player. And so when people, you know, I don't see color, I don't see gender. I see guitar players. And so she's amazing, and she plays Les Pauls. And, you know, if Jimmy Page heard her play, he'd snatch her up to play in our band.
What do you think of graphite nuts? I know people use those.
Stretch at Valley Sound loves them, has real good success with them, and so in certain applications with tremolos and certain guitars, I think they work great. Paul Reed Smith, a dear friend of mine, loves them, and so for that fact, I'd say they're very good, but I prefer bone, you know.
Yeah, they're very warm, Sam.
They're very warm. I like a guitar to chime.
Especially on a Les Paul.
Yeah, especially on Les Paul. My favorite nut material for Les Paul is a nylon 6/6, which I have the material, and it's a three-hour nut job, and it's a drag because it's just like your arm is falling off. But boy, the sound of that nylon 6/6, and that's the same material they use in the 50s, and it's the same material that they're using on the Gibson Custom Shop reissue R9s and stuff now, because it just sounds great. It has to age a little bit, but boy, does it ring nice and true. Mm-hmm. And it's a natural lubricant in the nylon 6/6, so it slips real good.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I just want to point out there, thank again, Jason, for calling. Our number here is 323-203-0815. 323-203-1815. 0815. God,
get off the lifesavers, brother.
Oh, I'm terrible.
No,
anyway.
I never am. Live radio.
And you can join us again in our chat room. We're getting some other people. One guy said that he quoted, I'm quoting here, he fixed my amp, talking about you, and he did a good job.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, most people, you know, you can't please everybody. I do the best I can. And the only thing perfect, in my opinion, is dead people. So, at that point in time, I just try to do the best job I can, okay? That's it. I'm not perfect, and I'm not, you know, Thor Hyde at all. I just do the best I can. And I embrace the etiquette that I do the best job I can, and I try to be as forward as possible. And that's it. It's simple. I keep it simple.
Well, he brought my JMP50 back to life, which is how I met him.
Yeah.
And took it to a couple of hacks before him that would just kind of spray it out and call me back and say, $100, it's all fixed, and get it home, and boom, went out again.
Boom, yeah.
You know, I don't know if it's because they thought, oh, a woman's bringing this in, she won't know, just spray it and call it $100. But no, my GM.
And that app still
JMP
blows up regular.
Is alive and well.
She blows up regular. She wants attention.
She does. She
the
does.
Old
but
gear
she can
wants
have an
attention.
AC30 to yeah, go stereo yeah. with pretty soon.
No, see, the old gear wants attention. Just like if yeah. you've been married for 30 years and you ain't taking care of your partner proper, then shame on you. Because if you're living with somebody, and you should treat them like gold. That's my opinion. So if you have a guitar that's been with you and you love her, then you need to treat her like gold. And it's better to take care of her before she deteriorates, especially them Gretsch guitars. The binding comes off, or the Guild guitars, the mm-hmm. binding will pop. Every guitar's got a story.
Right.
I can agree about the Guild guitars. I had one myself, but Andy had a fix for me.
That's right.
So speaking of vintage guitars, let's do a twofold question here. One, how if you're shopping for a vintage guitar, what's the easiest way for that buyer or one of the listeners to tell if that neck has been broken? Two, what guitars today do you think how do today's guitars compare to vintage? As a secondary question.
Take the guitar out in the light, look at the headstock behind the nut, see if there's some funny monkey business, there's some cracking or some weirdness. Get a black light if you're not sure. Take it to a professional if you want a good opinion. You know, a broken headstock is kind of like a real bummer. In my opinion, the guitar's worth half the money if the headstock's broken. You know, the reissue guitars, you can, if you know what you're doing, you can make a reissue guitar just wonderful. There's a lot of things you can change to make them really close. They're never going to smell or be old wood, but they'll be good enough. And, you know, people get really paranoid taking their vintage stuff out to clubs and playing. Sorry. And you know, the vintage market, it's a good investment if you know what you're buying. Les Pauls, Stratocasters, Martins, Gibson Acoustics, things like that are good investments. Marshalls, certain Fenders, good investments. But just because it's rare, like the, you know, the RD whatever Gibson thing that looks like it comes from the moon, you know, you couldn't give me one of them things. They weigh 900 pounds. And so if they only made 38 of them, thank God they only made 38.
I actually got to work on that.
Like the robot guitars, yeah. Man. I'm sorry all you people with them robot guitars. You know, I would take them and put them into the next phase of shuttles and send them up to the moon.
So we have another question here on our chat room. Fretboards. What kind of oil do you use? I use lemon oil from your original recommendation, yeah. Dunlop. But I've
good
actually
stuff.
Had a guy.
Jimmy Dunlop, good boy.
I've had a guy actually comment on one of my videos saying to use, I believe he said lin oil that you can get.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
I mean,
is that linseed oil?
No, this is just some different oils. Yamaha makes like this trombone oil that's really good. I like D'Andrea lemon oil without the petroleum distillates in it, right? And then the key is that you need to polish your frets with steel wool, and you need to use 400 steel wool. You need to tape off your pickups so the steel wool doesn't go everywhere. And if you look at my videos, go to YouTube and look at Guru, G-U-R-U, Guitar, G-U-I-T-A-R, Spa, S-P-A, and put that in to YouTube. You'll see some free videos that I did with Sean Stanek, who's a great director-producer, and it'll show you a lot of cool stuff, and it's free, so it won't hurt you.
It's interesting. You said the steel wool. One of the things I use is flitz on the frets and get them really buffed
you mean
up.
The fabric from the...
No, it's like a little cream. It's milder, like it's almost like toothpaste. It's a real mild
right,
abrasive.
Right, yeah, that stuff gets caked up in the fingerboard unless you tape off the fingerboard, unless you have a fret shield, and that time is is money, and so we like to do real clean work and not.
How often should you steal wool then?
Well, you know, it depends on how much you play, but I like to replace the strings. You know, John Fogerty replaces them every day when he records. Most of the big boys do. Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, you know, all the boys do, or they like them old. You know, Jeff likes some of his guitars old, and he doesn't really tune them. He plays them into tune, you know. And I've handed Jeff guitars that were so out of tune that I don't think Mickey Mouse could ride a giraffe on it. But still, he can make it sound like amazing.
Yeah,
so, you know, and so, and he's a, well, what a gentleman. You know, and, I mean, you know, he plays guitar like nobody else's business, you know, for me. So I would say there's, you get a silver polish cloth, kind of a blue polish cloth, and EWS is a good company. It's related to Exotic, the people that make those great pedals. EWS makes a polish cloth for the frets and a polish cloth for the plastic that's really good. And, you know, I would get some stuff like that, but you gotta get some education before you start.
Yeah, but if you steal a little too much, you're gonna wear it down, right?
Well, yes, and you gotta know what you're doing before you start taking steel wool and whacking it all over everywhere. You gotta vacuum it up. You gotta get it off the pickups. You can't put any rags near it. You gotta keep your bench clean. You gotta be organized. You gotta know what you're doing, because if you don't, you're gonna ruin it. And guess what? Then you gotta bring it to me, and it's gonna cost you twice as much because you're done. It up, right?
We got another question here.
Okay.
I've seen Guitar Tech stage side for bands. What are some crazy things that have happened on the spot fixes that pulled you through the gig?
Let's see. One of the favorite things that happened to one of my clients is they would have a wah-wah pedal, and the guy that came in and announced, "Hey, everybody, here's so-and-so," and the guy would step on the input jack, right? And he'd break the input jack off to the wah-wah. So what I did is I put in a different wah-wah to next to the real wah-wah, and the guy would come out and break that one, and guess what? It wasn't plugged in.
That's interesting. I'm going to have to get an extra wah-wah pedal. Just try that.
So speaking of those kind of moments, when we were talking today on the phone, you had mentioned you'd worked for Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and
yes.
You had a good story for that. So if you don't mind, would you share that?
I'm going to decline to stay on that one, but I will tell you, I love Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Neil Young especially, and those are good boys, and Stephen Stills is a true gentleman, and when I saw that he got, I saw that movie Prometheus, and he got a little credit for that song, and made my heart dance, because I knew it was going to be good for him, and he's a good boy, and there was a guitar that he was playing, and it was a 54 Strat, and it had little divots in the D chord area, and every time he opened the set with that guitar, that sucker would be out of tune from just playing it, you know. And I wanted to fill it, but you couldn't fill it because of a 54, so you had that big tug and war, what should we do? But I just, you know, I played it. If I played it, it would be in tune, but, you know, he played it, and he pushed a little too hard maybe, and she went out of tune. I took the fall, and I take responsibility for it. I should have figured out how much he was going to go sharp and flat, but I tuned it proper. So at that point in time, you know, you have to decide, like, maybe it's time to put her up on the wall and get another reissue, because, you know, I think the guy that came in later did something different. But, you know, it's hard. You just do the best you can. You know, the thing is, you have to trust your intuition, and you have to know the guy that you're working for. And you can always tell by the little looks. Like, I worked for Al DiMeola, and he's a sweetheart. And the only thing I ever did for him was adjust fans and look at the girls that he was pointing out on stage. He'd call me out on stage. Goes, "Look at that one." I'm like, "Okay, great, Al."
All right. Later. Now, if you don't mind, let's do kind of a quick round robin here. All right. So we'll go through some of the main guitars, and just if you were to go out and buy, let's say Stratocaster, Telecaster, Les Paul, SG, those main guitars that most people buy, what would be the one thing you would change off of right off the shelf? That's cheap, easy, and easy to do.
On Les Paul.
Les Paul. Let's start with Les Paul.
Filter cap, I mean the caps, and you know the caps inside the control cavity. I would look at the pickups. I would look at the nut material. I would get it set up first of all. Get the best out of it right out of the gate, and see, get some good opinion from somebody you trust.
Okay, you know? Telecaster.
Yeah.
What would you do to a Telecaster?
I would make sure you got a good bridge, that the bridge is tight to the body. Make sure that your neck on any Fender, make sure that your neck pocket is clean and that you have a good coupling, that the screws are tight. And there's a lot you can do with those four screws or three screws to get the sound right. Make sure your neck's adjusted properly, and make sure that your all your switches and control pots are clean.
Okay, Stratocaster.
Again, the neck thing, she's a fender, make sure she's clean. Check the nut. The bridge is really critical. Make sure that the three screws holding on the block of the bridge is tight, because those come loose and you get wacko sound. Make sure the tuning bushings are in tight. Make sure those tuners, if they're closens, if they're crimped and tight, that they're not all floppy and wobbly. And make sure your pickups aren't adjusted too high, because on the Stratocasters, if pickups are adjusted too high, you get that B-flat tone. You'll never get that guitar intonated.
SG.
Decline to comment on the SG, because I like the guitar, but there's so many issues, we don't have that much time.
You and Les Paul will get along about the SG. About a 6120 Gretsch?
Check the binding. Make sure that the electronics aren't falling apart and the wire's not coming undone. Make sure the fingerboard's not lifting. Make sure that the binding on the fingerboard's not lifting. Make sure the fingerboard is not warped. And check the veneer on the headstock. Make sure it's not coming undone. Stuff like that.
Oh, check the jack, because if we have to go fishing for
Okay, and an acoustic side to one of my new favorite companies. Well, not my new, but probably darn close to Gibson in my world, Martin, D28.
Make sure that your bridge isn't lifting. Make sure that you haven't worn through your bridge plate on underneath the bridge. And if you do, if the string is pulling up and going over the bridge saddle, then you need to put a ball end from an old string over the string to keep the winding part of the string down. Check the neck. Make sure you don't need a neck reset. Check those braces. You got to know how to check them braces. You know, boy, 74, D28. I could tell you a book on that one. Mo, what about Gibson acoustics?
Gibson acoustics?
Yeah. What's your opinion? Get to the close to the mic, darling.
There's so many of them I want.
Me too.
I like the big jumbos. My favorite is my J45 right now. That's my songwriting guitar. We got it from, who did it belong to? A guy from Tower of Power.
Right, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, beautiful Jake, sunburst.
Jake. Good old Jake.
But did you have to do anything to it?
Not, of course we did.
Not
yes.
too much. I mean,
I did all the work, well, that's why.
Okay, we changed the tuners.
But the body in terms of getting if you were getting a new Gibson acoustic, what would you recommend they have to do to that?
You have to cut the nut and do the bridge and tighten up the neck. The neck's always too loose.
I would probably change the nut. I love the bone on the acoustics. I just think it sounds awesome.
And change the material on the saddles, too.
Right.
Yeah, and just make sure the neck's tight. Make sure the bushings are tight on all your guitars. You know, if you've got tuners that have bushings that screw in, next time you restring them, sucker, grab a little tool and don't scratch the headstock. Grab a tool that fits properly and check it and tighten them up, because you'll get a much better sound.
Now, we're out of time as it goes so fast. Before we go, give your information out, Facebook page, your shop, if there's a website.
It's Andy Brower. I'm located at 5527 Cahuenga Boulevard. I'm there Monday, Friday, and Saturday. And the phone number is 818-631-3777. Please call for an appointment. If you live in Agua Dulce, Santa Clarita, Palmdale, Lancaster, Bakersfield, I have a shop there for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 818-631-3777. If you'd like to see some funny stuff about me, go to myspace.com/Andy Brower or facebook.com/Andy Brower Guitar. And then you can chime in and say, hey. But the thing is, it's all about the guitar. I love guitars. You know, it's people I can't stand, really, because they're generally very mean to everybody. I like to make people happy, and it's about the guitar. So I hope to hear from you.
All right, well, everyone.
Can I play for that?
You can play a little bit.
Scott, what do we have up for next week?
All right, well, next week we have Josh Childers from Atlas Stands and Lonnie Spector from LA Amp Show and Pedal Expo. He's a producer, and it'll be a great show. Make sure to visit us at www.flowguitarenthusiast.com and visit us on our Facebook site.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.